Welcome to Season 8, Episode 39 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday, the 1st of December, and this week we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and in the community. I'm Alan, and joining me this week is our usual contenders, Mark. Hello.
Hello.
And Martin.
Hello.
But Laura is away today, so we have a special guest presenter from underneath the planet. It's Nick. Hello, Nick.
Hello. How are you all?
Tickety-boo. How are you?
Pretty good.
Not too bad. Early morning here in Australia, but, you know, cup of coffee, ready to go.
Sweet. So people may know your dulcet tones from another podcast, which is System AU. Am I right?
They might know my voice from System AU, but you've got a pretty big audience, so I have a feeling a lot of people probably haven't heard my tones at all.
Oh, stop it. So where can people find out how to get hold of System AU if they want to listen to more of your lovely voice?
Oh, look, well, I'm not going to list every single point of contact because there's quite a lot of them. But basically, systemau.net.au is your best bet. We've got a couple of RSS streams there, and we're pretty new to the Linux/tech podcast world, but we're enjoying it.
Excellent. Well, I hope you get a few extra listeners out of this. And
so do I.
All right, let's get on with it.
And now it's time for the news. And first in the news, Alan.
I'm in the news. Oh, brilliant.
Oh, yes. Of course.
In the news, security researcher Joe Nord has discovered Dell have inadvertently shipped laptops to customers containing a self-signed root certificate installed and its private key, which apparently this means a malicious hacker could exploit this flaw on open public networks like Wi-Fi hotspots, coffee shops and stuff to impersonate any other website to a Dell user and quietly intercept, read and modify all of their vulnerable Dell system web traffic. Oh dear. Is this as bad as the Lenovo Superfish thing, or not as bad, or just as bad? Or
I think it's a bit worse because you've got the private key on the system as well. So the Superfish stuff was more about intercepting things. It didn't mean that you could spoof so much. What's interesting about this is that a lot of people have said, Windows troubles and all the rest of it. But what this illustrated to me is you have to put a lot of trust into the provider of your computer to actually get it right. And there's nothing to say that somebody selling, say, Ubuntu laptops couldn't make the same mistake and actually
How dare you, Martin?
Well, I'm not saying that this is a flaw in Ubuntu.
Entroware would do that?
No, I'm not saying Entroware would do it. I'm saying Dell might do it, seeing as though they've done it with Windows.
The exact same flaw is possible.
Yeah, on any operating system,
yeah. Hmm. But Dell have now pushed an update to remove the certificate, which is good.
how many machines does this affect? Is this like only something bought in the last year, or is this, you know, going back to Windows 98 or what?
I'd read that it affected some machines since August this year. So I don't know. I don't have a precise number I can put a finger on. But, you know, given Dell sells a lot of computers, that's probably a lot of computers in the last, 4 months.
Well, given this news article came out, like, you know, just this month or just last month, and they've already pushed an update to remove it, I think, you know, they've done the right thing to remove it and not, you know, try and claim that it was, you know, anything other than a mistake.
So yes,
I applaud them for that. But, yeah, they shouldn't have done it. Moving on. Nick.
Hello. Yeah, I get to talk about British politics. This is this is good. The UK Internet Service Providers Association has met with the Home Office and they've outlined some of their concerns with the draft Investigatory Powers Bill. The head of what is one of the best named ISPs in the world, Andrews and Arnold, presented a 6-page document discussing the group's ethical and technical concerns of the bill's proposal. This is quite interesting, as we've got very similar stuff going on in Australia at the moment regarding metadata retention and the government basically wanting to snoop. But here you've got quite a cluey fellow giving some pretty good reasons as to why the government won't find any use out of this information.
Yeah, he's written some choice articles and made some amusing videos in the past about, you know, how clueless our government departments are in this kind of, you know, area, which is an area of his expertise, being that he's run an ISP for a very long time. I read the document, and while, you know, there are some interesting choice quotes in there, it also did look like it had just been hammered out really, really quickly, and then like a massive rant, you know, and then emailed in. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a bit disingenuous. I don't know.
No, you look. I actually looked at the document and went, "Oh yeah, this looks like a kid wrote it." Really, not very nice letterheads. Yeah, but the one that got me though was because in Australia, with the law coming through, smaller ISPs under the same scrutiny as the larger ISPs. Now, according to this article, it says the smaller ISPs are not intended to be hit as hard because they are smaller and it is harder to log all this data, which thereby just makes the whole law pointless.
Right, everyone just moves to a different ISP, yeah. Don't they?
I mean, currently, all of the current laws regarding you know, blocking of certain websites and so on have all currently been on the big four ISPs, and anyone who's not, so I'm not with one of these ISPs, and it's none of it's affected any of me, which again makes it completely pointless.
Whereas I am with one of them, and
it's still completely pointless.
And it's also completely pointless because I just open an SSH tunnel to my VPS in London and bypass these stupid controls.
Yes. Yeah.
And just for the record, I'm not with an ISP that is implementing the same measures either, so I'm not experiencing any of that.
Or indeed one that uses, you know, anything like cables or silly things. Like
no,
that.
No. Why would you use something as old-fashioned as a bit of wire?
But yeah, it's good to see that, you know, talk about this bill is still being you know, it's still news, it's still something that we need to be concerned about and write to people about and make noise about.
Indeed,
definitely.
Next up, Mozilla has released Firefox OS 2.5 developer preview, which includes an Android app which allows you to try out Firefox OS without flashing your device. So if you have an Android phone, you can go to their website and download the app, which installs as an alternative home screen launcher, and it's Firefox OS, but within Android. So you can launch Firefox OS apps as well as all of your normal apps and play around with the sort of environment of Boot to Gecko and see all the settings screens and stuff. Some of them don't work because they use the Android settings, but it's good fun to play around with, actually.
That's a rather cunning way of sidestepping the whole making devices lark and having to do hardware support, because all you're doing, well, not all, but the main thing you do is just supply your entire environment as a standalone app is effectively what they're doing.
I don't think this is something that which they're intending as a method of shipping Firefox OS. I think this is to put it in the hands of developers who might otherwise not either buy a phone or have a dedicated Firefox OS phone.
But they did supply dedicated Firefox OS phones. Like the Firefox Flame was a developer phone.
Yes, no, I mean, but people who might be interested, you know, might have in their head, oh yeah, I've got an app and I could probably make it work on Firefox OS, but they're not actually bothered enough to go out and buy.
They're not $100 bothered.
Yeah, exactly. Not $100 bothered. Not have a phone, you know, flash a phone bothered, but they might be install an app and play around bothered.
Is this accurate enough to actually use as a development environment, in development platform?
Well, yeah, because it's just Firefox. Yeah. So, you create a web app with a manifest and it's all contained in the same way that it would be on a Firefox phone. It should probably behave in, you know, 99% the same way.
Okay, so yeah. Purely,
I mean,
you can
download
HTML5 applications, you mean?
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes, you can download apps from the Firefox OS marketplace and run them within this Firefox OS environment.
Okay.
So I was chatting on Telegram within Firefox OS within Android using the Firefox OS Telegram app, because it's just basically launching HTML5 apps.
Cunning. Do you have Firefox OS devices over in Oz, Nick, or have they not made their way over there?
Look, in Oz, it's a bit odd because we certainly do get a lot of the major brand mobile phones, but we've got a really big grey market for phones in Australia. We've got a large sort of a Asian contingent because we're so close to Asia. A lot of grey market phones and a lot of phone shops in the middle of shopping centres and whatnot will also sell phones. I've not seen a Firefox phone, but it wouldn't surprise me if there's a few about, but certainly not through official route.
Mm, interesting.
I've tried to run this as the developer preview. I installed the APK on my Marshmallow OnePlus One, and it failed dismally. But you know, it's running Marshmallow, so. Yeah. Don't know whether I'm going to blame the Firefox for that and whether I just blame my phone.
I was running it on a OnePlus One, but it's running the whatever the current supported CyanogenOS is, which is still on the not Marshmallow, the one before it.
Lollipop.
And there's some other news from Mozilla as well.
Yeah, they are seeking a new home for Thunderbird.
Again?
Well, I think they previously announced that they were basically going to stop developing it themselves and anyone else could, you know, still contribute patches from the community and whatever. But they've said that it's time to uncouple Thunderbird and Firefox so they can focus on activities like Firefox that can have an industry-wide impact. And there's apparently at least one organization interested in taking custodianship of Thunderbird. So
at
we'll
least
see who
one.
That is. At
That's
least
better than
one.
None, isn't it?
Yes. It's infinitely better than none.
Why would you say at least one?
Well,
that's
maybe
just a really bizarre. If you're talking about having industry wide impact, why would you say? And someone down the pub promised us that they would look after Thunderbird for us.
Yeah, it's not quite clear what that means. It isn't clear if this means Thunderbird will move wholesale out of the Mozilla camp to a new entity entirely, or if it will stay within the Mozilla infrastructure and be maintained and developed by another outfit. You know, none of that seems to have been decided at this stage.
They should move it over to the Apache Foundation. That will be 100% successful, I would
imagine. Oh, dear. Or Oracle. Maybe Oracle would be a better bet. Yeah.
Moving on.
The Raspberry Pi Foundation have announced the Pi Zero, a smaller, cheaper Raspberry Pi, priced at $5 or £4. It's available free this month on the cover of Magpie magazine, and that was issued in the UK last Friday as we record this podcast, and circulation of the Magpie magazine with the Pi Zero will be coming to the US very soon. And the initial run of Magpie and all 30,000 Pi Zeros were sold out within 24 hours of the announcement, and there are more on the way.
I got one.
Well, on the magazine.
Yeah.
Did you leave it in its plastic wrap like a good boy, or have you ripped it apart?
Well, I'm going to be using it. I didn't buy it just to look at. I'm not some weird magazine collector.
You're not Topi.
I'm a perfectly normal magazine collector. There's nothing weird about it at all. So, yeah, this looks good. It's a nice, you know, very small, inexpensive computing device with slightly fewer features, but, you know, useful for projects, I would imagine.
Yeah. So it's got, it's sort of comparable in terms of specs to the first generation Raspberry Pi. It's got the same system on chip and same amount of RAM, slightly higher clocked processor. And it's got, one micro USB port for data and another for charging, and it doesn't have the GPIO pins in it, but it's got the headers for them and a few other headers which are unpopulated, so you can, you know, stick bits on if you want those features. But if you just need to, if you just want to use it for very basic stuff, then, like, you know, just for doing some Python programming or something, then it's good to go for that.
And the makers are going to love this, aren't they, for integrating into, you know, robots and contraptions and what have you. It's
I saw one hack where someone had made an original Xbox controller. They'd put it inside that and they were playing Doom on the Raspberry Pi Zero.
Yes.
With the Xbox controller connected up to a TV.
They've done that in that 4 days. Eden.
Yeah, I saw Terrence tweet about this he was discussing with someone else, has anyone else bagsied this as a cool project to do? and then he did it. Yeah, in a couple of days. Looked quite cool.
Yeah.
So Sean Boupre, I think is how you pronounce it, discovered and documented a vulnerability that affects all Snapdragon 805 devices, such as the Motorola Droid Turbo /Max. They have wacky names, the American phones, Motorola Nexus 6 and Samsung Galaxy Note 4, dubbed Trust No One or Trust None.
Trust None, I think.
Trust None. Yeah. It affects all publicly seen versions of the Trust Zone kernel, an ARM feature that allows a secure world kernel to run alongside the normal world kernel and was successfully exploited to unlock the Motorola Droid Turbo's bootloader.
The most important thing is that it's got a catchy name.
Yeah, they've taken the Z.
Does it have a logo?
Taken the Z and just, you know, rotated it 90 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's clever, isn't it?
So are we concerned about this? Do we need to throw away our Motorola Nexus 6s in disgust?
Well, arguably all phones are, you know, compromised in some way, if you believe Edward Snowden. Yeah. So, you know, this is just...
So what's one more compromise?
Yeah, I think what this is a sort of a double-edged sword, because on the one side, you're going to have the Android hackers who are going to be very pleased that there is now an exploit to unlock the bootloader on some of these devices that don't have a legitimate means of doing that. But the other side of this is another find in a litany of discoveries in how insecure this Trust Zone kernel is and how badly it actually handles the validation of inputs that it receives. So, yes, this is probably one of more to come. And, yeah, it does mean that this is a means of a phone being compromised fairly trivially, but predictably.
Well, I think that's all the time we've got for news this week.
And now it's time for some community news and events. And first up on the community news is the new... Oh, no. That's the second one. The first one is Didier Roche sent a mail to the Ubuntu developer list today, which I found interesting. He wants to make more languages baked into the live CD, the live Ubuntu CD by default, because at the moment there's a small number of languages on the CD when you boot up, and then you choose a language partway through the install, and then extra stuff gets downloaded from the internet to make those languages work. And what he's proposing is we bake more of the standard languages into the CD so that they can be distributed in places where English isn't the first language and people don't have to download extra stuff in order to get the language that they want to use, which I thought was quite a good idea.
Interesting. I wonder if Did has looked at what some of the flavors are doing, because if you look at some of the flavors, that's already happened in some...
Any flavor in particular?
Well, I took inspiration from a couple of other flavors. And the way I did it is I actually looked at the statistics of who was reading the Ubuntu Mate website from around the world, and then drew up a top 10 list of countries, and then used those languages as the languages that are available on the image.
Interesting. Didier used PopCon,
yeah,
the popularity contest thing, to see what languages.
I didn't have access to that. At the time.
Congratulations.
Not now. I do now, but at the time, okay. Yeah.
Congratulations, by the way, for lasting 19 minutes before mentioning.
Yeah, thank you very much.
The second item, which was almost the first one, but is back to being the second one, is the new community council has been elected. We mentioned this before, that the vote was ongoing and the new community council has been announced. And it comprises four canonical people and four non-canonical people, I think, if I can count correctly. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yes.
Yes.
A few new faces. One.
Five. No, sorry. Five non-canonical. No, sorry. I'm trying to include Mark Shuttleworth in the count and getting it wrong.
Well,
just
done.
Carry on, Alan. Ignore me.
Okay. A couple of interesting new faces, including Scarlett Clark, who works on KDE and Kubuntu. And as part of her mission statement, if you like, for joining the CC, she said she wants to build bridges between Ubuntu and Kubuntu. So,
well, that's good.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Excellent.
Shall I move on to the next one?
Yeah.
Okay. Finally, in the community news, the UEFI Forum Board of Directors have announced the firmware test suite as recommended in the ACPI 5.1 self-certification test today. And the reason why I mentioned this in there is because actually Firmware Test Suite was a project started by someone in the Ubuntu community, Colin King, who works on the kernel team. And it was quite nice for that set of tools that do testing of firmwares to be adopted by the UEFI forum board. I think that was really good.
And we do have some events.
The first event in our calendar is the 10th Egg and Raspberry Pi Jam, which has the code name Gamification. That's taking place in the Gartner offices in Surrey on Sunday the 17th of January. And it says, bring along your gaming centres and your game controllers and other games that you can play with your Raspberry Pi to show them off.
I should go along and take my Pi-cade, should. Shouldn't I? That would be good fun.
My purchase order for a Pi-cade was denied, so...
Why did they deny it? What are you doing to Raspberry Pi arcades that they just don't want you to have
one? I asked my wife if I could buy one and she said no. And now I have a sad face.
Ah, now you see what I did was not ask my wife if I could buy one.
I did that once with a massive television set about 20 years ago and I've learned never to do that again.
Ah, it's funny. I did that with a massive TV as well. And yeah.
Did it go a lot better for you?
Nope, it did not.
In my defense, my father-in-law persuaded me to do that, so it's all his fault.
I'd just like to say that having heard this podcast many times before, I always thought you said egg and raspberry jam. but I'm now reading the notes, and it's egg ham.
Ham and raspberry jam. No.
Yeah, yeah. I just thought it was a play on, you know, a play on food names.
Yeah, it turns out there is actually a place called Eggham. There you go. Yeah,
there you go. I do now.
Moving on. January 21st to the 24th in California is SCALE, Southern California Linux Expo 14X at the Pasadena Convention Center. It's the largest community-run open source and free software conference in North America. And there's a whole load of people from Ubuntu, including me, going. And attached to SCALE, there's going to be an UbuCon Summit with loads of talks and workshops and stuff, very much like the mold of the old Ubuntu Developer Summits of yore. We'll put links in the show notes to the expo, but there's also a the Ubuntu California loco team have got a meetup page, and you can, if you're going to come along, then you could you know, click your mouse on the buttons necessary to say that you're coming along. That would be great, and I'll maybe see you there.
We also have FOSDEM 2016. FOSDEM is a free and non-commercial event organised by the community for the community. The goal is to provide free and open source software developers and communities a place to meet. And it's at the Université Libre de Brussels in Brussels, Belgium, on the 30th of Jan to the 31st of Jan 2016.
Yes. Any of you going?
No, I would love to, but can't get time off work.
Yeah.
Alas, I'm a bit busy.
If only there was a conference in Australia, and, Nick.
Well, funnily enough, it's the day after. It's on the 1st
really?
Of February.
Oh, so it is.
Yeah, what's it's that, the then? Day after. Well, that's linuxconf.au, which is Australia's biggest Linux conference, I believe. Now, it's not in the style of OgCamp, where it's sort of a community-run event. This is a, you know, very much sponsored by corporations. But yeah, quite big. Apparently Linus comes down nearly every year for it, not to speak, just to have a holiday.
Yeah, and come diving,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I've seen some of the videos and sometimes watch the live stream, and I watched it last year. There was a live stream from one of the developers of a piece of software that Linus started, some diving software for managing your scuba diving records, and the guy was talking about how they migrated this software, I can't remember what it's called now, but migrated their software away from GTK to Qt, and how much easier that made things and how fewer headaches there were when they moved from GTK to Qt. It was quite an interesting talk, and it was quite nice to watch that live, and then when people filed out the room, see people milling about and then playing, you know, spot the Linuxy nerd, as you like, oh, I know him. Look, there's Matthew Garrett. And, you know. Yeah.
Well, I think Matthew Garrett's coming again this year. It's got a keynote by everyone's favorite community developer, John O'Bacon. So he'll be popping over for it. And awesome. What's even more exciting on my end, I've not been to a Linux conf, but this is in my hometown. So literally the conference center is only 1.5 miles from here. So
that's quite unusual for Australia, really, isn't it?
Like,
everything is really spread out. And
everything is spread out. They do They do try and put the Linux conf in regional areas, which is good. Like, they obviously have it in our capital cities, but they sort of go out of their way to put it in a bit of the smaller towns to promote it a bit more. So, yeah, that's February 1st to 5th, and we'll be doing a live broadcast from it as a bit of a self-plug there. So if you're in Geelong, come along.
Nice. Nice.
Oh, nice. Excellent.
No, that's unofficial. Unofficial.
Oh, what? Not affiliated with Linux? You're just going to surreptitiously sneak in with a microphone and stream or something?
No, we've booked out a pub for the night after the fourth night. So we'll have a little room in a bar there and a table set up so people can have a few post-Linux conf beers and watch us talk.
Excellent. Junk. Lovely. That sounds great.
And last up, we've got DevConf CZ 2016. And DevConf CZ is a free annual developer conference for all Linux and JBoss community developers, admins, and Linux users. And it's organized by Red Hat from the Czech Republic in cooperation with Fedora and JBoss communities. And you can find more about that event at DevConf CZ. And we'll have links to that in the show notes. And I've neglected to put the date of that event, so I can't remember, but I think it was mid-February-ish.
Sometime next year.
Yeah, all of these events are in our off period, yeah.
Awesome. Thanks very much. That's all the community news and events.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh a little bit. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@ubuntupodcast.org. Or you can leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, ubuntupodcast.org.
Well, that's it for episode 39. We'll be back next week when you'll be bringing you some of the interviews we recorded from OgCamp and some command line love. And maybe, Nick, will you be around next week to come back and stand in for Laura? Because I think she's out again next week as well.
Look, I've got nothing to do for the entire week. I'll just hang around.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Thank you, Nick.
Brilliant. Yeah, we'll just leave you hanging on the mumble and we'll just like reconnect next week. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Brilliant. Thanks for joining us, Nick. See you next week. And thanks, everyone, for listening. See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. So we stop recording and start again?